Northwestern's Institute of Sexual and Gender Minority Health and Well-Being. We'll link to his piece in Scientific American just out today. World AIDS Day is a grim reminder that we have more than one pandemic going on. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Geisler, Libby Rainey, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Ndura, Sam Alkoff, Tamaria Studio, John Hamilton, Ravi Karen. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Becca Staley. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe, wear a mask.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. It's time now for the unpreempted edition of Off the Wall. very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. Joined tonight by Kyle.
Yeah, I'm here. Hey, how you doing?
Well, I'm surprised that we should be playing basketball right now, and we're not.
Happy December 1st.
It's the 1st of December. A lot going on here. Action packed. Yeah, another month has just started. I only found out about that a few minutes ago. But yeah, it's supposed to be a basketball game tonight. So those of you Hoopster fans who are wondering, don't blame us, okay? What happened was this. We're living in perilous, crazy times. There's supposed to be a basketball game tonight between Sacred Heart and Stony Brook, the men's team this time. Tomorrow is going to be the women's team. Same face-off. I think that's how they do it now. But there was an outbreak at Sacred Heart University in Connecticut, the team we're supposed to be playing. So game was canceled. In fact, a bunch of games have been canceled. So
let me guess. COVID-19.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was right.
I said an outbreak. I think that pretty much...
There's lots of outbreaks. Just figure we ought to be specific.
Not to brag or anything like that, but I have to say Stony Brook has done an amazing job as far as keeping the campus safe. There haven't been outbreaks involving our teams as of yet. Doesn't mean that we're in any way immune, but it does show that you can keep these things somewhat controlled if you're intelligent about it. And I've noticed that in many places where people wear the masks, where people keep the social distancing and stop with the complaining and just realize this is the situation and we have to deal with it. You have better results. Imagine that. You have better results. And look at where you're not having good results, where people don't wear the mask, where people gather, where people are, just facing off against science for some reason. And that's where you're seeing most of the tragedy that's going on today. Yeah, the end might be in sight. We're hearing very promising things about vaccines. But there's going to be those people that refuse to take the vaccine. So this could just never end. But at least for those people that do believe in science and are halfway intelligent, the end may be in sight. So fingers crossed on that. Continue to maintain all the precautions that we've been talking about since the beginning of the year. Can't believe it's been going on that long. Remember being on that train up in northern Quebec, going to Schefferville, and we were hearing reports then of the first cases in China, although now they're saying that coronavirus might have been present in the United States in mid-December of last year, so I don't know. It's going to turn out that it started here at some point, I'll bet. But yeah, all year long, we've just been seeing it getting worse and worse and worse, and we're approaching 300,000 deaths. Not quite there yet, but by the end of the year?
Yeah, they'll say it will have doubled from the milestone of 250,000, and it's important to realize the acceleration. This disease is no less contagious than it was when we were first learning about it, and the ability for it, now that a lot of these super spreader events and places not observing the guidelines are really being hit, it is multiplying at that same rate multiplying through a larger population but in the same contagiousness as it was before. So when many more people have something so contagious, you get case numbers that just spike very quickly. It took us 100 days. I think I looked at some of the statistics. Correct me if I'm wrong, of course, but the first 100 days we got 1 million cases, or it took 100 days to get the first 1 million. Mm-hmm. And now we were able to achieve that in less than like a week.
Nobody knew that that's how viruses work. Nobody knew that's how contagions work.
No, we did. No.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's
called epidemiology.
I'm quoting Trump. I'm sorry. Oh, I shouldn't do that. Yeah, but of course we all knew this, and it was... it was just slowed down so tremendously by the people who insisted on saying no for no good reason. And that's what we've been dealing with now for such a period of time. And I sure hope those days are over too. Hey, happy Thanksgiving. We made it through that holiday.
We did. It's a tradition. It's a meal. Mainly a meal.
Yeah. Well, along with some social niceties and things like that.
No, not this year. No.
Well, no, actually, it was very socially nice for me because I didn't have to, actually make my way somewhere. It was neat. We just stayed in, and we did the traditional things. We reached out to people, said, "Hey, how you doing? Okay, that's enough. We got to get back to our food." And we made a turkey. You made a turkey, really. We picked one out in the store.
Well, yeah. Usually the trip is to go someplace where wherever the host is, where the turkey's happening. And barring that kind of travel, mm-hmm. we decided, like a lot of other households or bubbles or whatever you want to call folks that are not traveling, participated in making the bird. And that was a lot of fun.
It really was.
I enjoyed planning, and I really just a couple days before found some basic recipes and kept the recipes simple. Like, see, not a lot of other stuff. The simple stuff.
I've always gone to places where somebody has been slaving over the meal for hours or days. I didn't know. And I got to say, folks, it's likely you have a mother or a grandparent or somebody who has done this in the past. You have not given them enough respect for all the work it takes. I saw it firsthand this time, and I participated to a degree.
I think
I made Brussels sprouts. I made cranberry sauce, and I held a turkey at one point.
You hit it right on. There's so many people that take on this stuff, and you did multiple dishes that are kind of the support to the larger main dishes, and all of that stuff makes it that full plate that everybody,
I wash those dishes too,
that everybody thinks of when they think of Thanksgiving. Yeah, lots of dishes too. You got to keep them moving.
It does. It's a continuous pace. You know, you have to clean the dishes while we're using the dishes. Otherwise, you wind up with a huge stack, and plus, you run out of dishes because we don't have that many.
But a lot of respect to the people like mothers. I know we used to maybe be a little more critical of my mother. You know, kind of getting stressed out because, of course, she's the host of,
yeah,
of whatever.
Yeah, so aggravated about, yeah. Why don't you just come and enjoy the holiday kidding? Like everybody else?
You try planning a meal like that. Yeah, no, I think we need to be a little bit calmer in our criticism and the wait times. You know, oh, dinner's taking a while.
But we didn't have Uncle Joe flying in from Toledo. We didn't have anybody to worry about. It was just for us, and it was still stressful because there was so much work to do. But yeah. You had a plan. I mean, first of all, we found this frozen turkey. And, okay, here's something interesting. Apparently, kosher turkeys don't have the, is it giblets or giblets? I don't know which way you pronounce it.
Both.
Okay, you know, the stuff, the heart and the liver and all that. Apparently, kosher turkeys, for some reason, don't have those, or at least the one that we got.
Certain brands.
Yeah, and we didn't know that. We were digging everywhere trying to find these damn organs that you're supposed to have as part of the whole preparation.
It's usually a hassle because a lot of the major brands flash freeze these things. Well, uh-huh. A lot of them are, all of them are probably frozen that way, but the bag kind of becomes frozen to the inside of the cavity.
Our
of the
turkey
bird.
Was raised in a stress-free environment, they said, up until the end, I imagine.
Sign me up.
And had a very happy life. We're not getting into the specifics of the actual bird's name and lineage and all that, but suffice to say that it had a joyous life and was not one of these mass-produced ones. At least that's what the bag said.
And it's also prepared in a way where it's in a continuous brine throughout the processing of it.
But you also brined it. Is brine a verb? Can you do that?
Yeah.
You brined it.
I broned. Yeah.
But it was also tense. The whole kosher experience involves a degree of brining too, I believe.
That's what I was saying. Yeah. And then we did our own kind of household brining prior. Mostly people do that because turkey itself is a dry meat.
Not this one. By the time you were finished with it, it was the most succulent. It literally was falling off the bone of the drumsticks.
In places, yeah.
Which is what you want.
Yeah. But I learned a lot of good tips. Again, it's that framework. Having recipes helps. And then you kind of throw whatever else is works that you have ingredients-wise or herbs and spices and that kind of stuff. And I even learned some tricks from my memories of the past and the frustration where you're making gravy in the last minutes before everybody sits down
and packing it with stuffing,
corral grandpa or whatever. And not to try to thicken the gravy mm-hmm. while it's in the roasting pan. Make sure you strain it and then move it to a saucepan to evaluate it. And honestly, it didn't need any kind of like cornstarch or flour.
I'm just amazed at how much one bird can give you.
Oh yeah, we're not going to let anything go to waste. I've frozen some of the remaining stuff that we made a stock. So mm-hmm. we have a lot of turkey stock, and then I froze the remaining bones and vegetables.
We've had about 8 turkey sandwiches each since then.
Yeah, I'm gonna pressure
plus some plates filled with stuffing and
I'm gonna pressure
and potatoes and gravy. Yeah.
I'm going to pressure cook the stuff that's remaining from the broth I made, but that's like phase 3. That'll phase 4 broth that's frozen will come in handy
and,
like,
you know,
later in the year.
You ask yourself, why are we doing this? It's because it's tradition. And it's just, that's it. That's all you need. It's just a bit of tradition. It's a link to the past. You know, we're just two people, and we had to do this. We had to cook a turkey and just do the thing that is part of this holiday, even though this holiday is nothing like what it was. And I have to say, it was one of the best ones I've ever had.
Yeah, I love those, like you said, the leftover sandwiches. I think everybody loves the leftovers of the holiday. So mm-hmm. anyway, yeah, it was kind of cool to have that. The cranberries, those cranberries were so good.
I made those.
Fresh cranberry sauce. Got to do that.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
So best turkey, best holiday. Plus, we're still postponing Thanksgiving 6 months, so May 27th, we're going to do this again, except we'll do it with people, assuming that, you know, we get through this okay.
And different kind of roast.
And we watched part of the Thanksgiving parade.
Which was interesting.
It was kind of pathetic because they I don't know why they even bothered, but they just had performances in front of Macy's. They didn't march down Broadway or anything like that.
A lot of
TV
virtual
show.
Performances,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, a lot of virtual, and it was done days ahead of time, and some of it was live. But you know what? On TV was pretty much exactly the same as what they always show. But out there in the streets, no, it didn't happen. It didn't need to happen either. So new traditions, you know, do different things instead. I was going to try and watch the Grey Cup, you know, the Canadian football championship. And I found out that their entire season was canceled. So I didn't even know. I wasn't paying that close attention. But hope your Thanksgiving went well as well as ours. It wasn't as bad as everybody said it was going to be. And everything that's ahead that's going to get canceled too, that's not going to be so bad either. We'll get through that. The important thing is to stay healthy and to find other ways of having fun and keeping in touch. Just imagine if we've been going through this 20 years ago, 30 years ago. I'm thinking of myself growing up, you know, in Queens. Well before the internet, what would we have done? How would we have stayed in contact? It would have been a nightmare. It would have been terrible. There are so many ways of reaching out right now and communicating with people, and so many options on entertaining yourself and the old options as well as the new ones. So home stretch. I hope it's the home stretch, and we're going to make it. But yeah, no basketball tonight.
But you have us, and we have you.
Yeah, and you're stuck with us. And I assume Finn's coming on at 7 as well. So,
of course he is.
Yeah, okay, good. That always makes me feel good. So the election, boy, it's over. You know, it's definitely over. We'll get to Trump in a second, but I got to say, I don't know what's going on here in Suffolk County. They still haven't finished counting the damn votes. It's December 1st, for God's sake. It's almost a full month. I mean, you know how I found out about this? Lee Zeldin, our ultra right wing fascist hypocrite representative, he was complaining that Nancy Gruff, who is running against him for the House of Representatives, has not conceded yet. And she hasn't conceded yet because the votes haven't been announced yet, and there's something like 60,000 votes left. I don't think she's going to win personally, but. Yeah, you know, I call Lee Zeldin a hypocrite because he doesn't complain about Trump refusing to concede. He does complain about Nancy Gruff refusing to concede when she has a shot, albeit a small shot, but she does have a shot. Trump has no shot. Does he complain about Trump refusing to concede the election? No, he doesn't. Only when it affects him. So we have this slim possibility that... that Zeldin could lose. I don't think it's going to happen. I wish it would. We have, I think, a much greater chance of our local assemblyman, Steve Englebright, winning, even though he is has been listed as being behind his Republican challenger now for almost a month, the votes aren't being counted. They're the same as they were on November 3rd. If you go to the Suffolk County Board of Elections website, has not changed. And it's...
Why?
I don't know.
Does
I can't,
anyone know?
It's like everyone's just sort of lost interest. There's no news stories about it. I don't see any updates anywhere. And
what's the plan?
The Board of Elections doesn't have any updates on their site either. So, guys, finish counting. It matters. We care. We're here and we want to know. We want to know who won. That's why we did all this in the first place. So, please, do you need help counting? Or what is it? What's the problem here? It shouldn't take a month. And that's not to say anything about the dedication of the people working the elections. My God, the strength of character that people show. I want to read you something that happened yesterday, just to give you an example of the kind of crap people are facing. An attorney for the Trump campaign yesterday issued a call for violence against Chris Krebs. You know him, the former cybersecurity official who was kicked out of his post by President Trump for the crime of rejecting his unfounded claims of widespread voter fraud. Joe DiGenova, the attorney for Trump's campaign, said this during an appearance on the Howie Carr show, whatever that is. Anybody who thinks the election went well, like that idiot Krebs, who used to be the head of cybersecurity, that guy is a Class A moron. He should be drawn and quartered, taken out at dawn, and shot. Yeah, that is what people in the Trump administration are saying. It's sickening. It is absolutely sickening. I want to play you something, if I can figure out how to do this, because I'm playing through Twitter, believe it or not. This is the Secretary of State of Georgia responding to that and the numerous other horrible things that have happened from that political slant, Trump's people, and the things that they have been saying, the things they have been putting people through. And keep in mind, this guy is a Republican. This guy is the Georgia Secretary of State. And let's see if this works.
I'm going to do my best to keep it together, because it has all gone too far. All of it. Joe DiGenova today asked for Chris Krebs, a patriot who ran CISA, to be shot. A 20-something tech in Gwinnett County today has death threats and a noose put out saying he should be hung for treason because he was transferring a report on batches from an EMS to a county computer so he could read it. It has to stop. Mr. President, you have not condemned these actions or this language. Senators, you have not condemned this language or these actions. This has to stop. We need you to step up, and if you're going to take a position of leadership, show some. My boss, Secretary Raffensperger, his address is out there. They have people doing caravans in front of their house. They've had people come onto their property. Trisha, his wife of 40 years, is getting sexualized threats through her cell phone. It has to stop. This is elections. This is the backbone of democracy. And all of you who have not said a damn word are complicit in this. It's too much. Yes, fight for every legal vote. Go through your due process. We encourage you. Use your First Amendment. That's fine. Death threats. Physical threats. Intimidation. It's too much. It's not right. They've lost the moral high ground to claim that it is. I don't have all the best words to do this because I'm angry. And the straw that broke the camel's back today is, again, this 20-year-old contractor for a voting system company just trying to do his job. Just there. In fact, I talked to Dominion today and they said he's one of the better ones they got. His family's getting harassed now. There's a noose out there with his name on it. It's not right. I've got police protection outside my house. Fine. You know, I took a higher profile job. I get it. Secretary ran for office. His wife knew that too. This kid took a job. He just took a job. And it's just wrong. I can't begin to explain the level of anger I have right now over this. And every American, every Georgian, Republican and Democrat alike, should have that same level of anger. I'm going to.
Yeah, that is something. The Secretary of State of Georgia speaking out yesterday, I believe, on the calls for violence and death against people who are maintaining the integrity of this election. A Republican calling out his own party. And yeah, the president has not condemned it. Our own representative, Lee Zeldin, has not condemned it and probably will never condemn it. It's sad, it's pathetic, but you hear the emotion in his voice. I just found it incredible. And I don't think people realize just what's going on as far as what people are going through in other parts of the country who are dealing with this. In New York, the election was pretty decisive, but in other places where this fiction that there was some kind of corruption is being brought up, the people who refute that, the people who present the evidence, they're the ones, just like the people who stand up for science. They find themselves in this horrible position where they're fearing for their lives for doing what's right.
Yeah, it's unfair because the work they're doing is so critical and it's escalating to the level of consequence that really is... it's not something that the people threatening them would have to face doing their jobs.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully not. I can't imagine it. Georgia's Republican lieutenant governor today joined a growing list of GOP officials. It's not growing fast enough. It is growing a bit. But he joined that growing list who are publicly rejecting Trump's baseless claims of voter fraud, saying the misinformation spread by the president and his allies is alarming and could jeopardize the party in the upcoming runoff elections. Yeah, and that's not a bad thing. That is definitely not a bad thing because this kind of nonsense stops when people like that are no longer in power.
They're letting him soil the bed for them.
Well, apparently that's almost exactly what he's doing.
He's into it.
Well, what is alarming is the amount of misinformation that continues to flow. That's according to Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan. It's alarming to me. It's certainly disheartening to watch folks willing to kind of put their character and their morals out there just so they can spread a half-truth or a lie in the efforts to maybe flip an election. That's not what democracy is all about. It's December 1st. It's good these people are finally speaking up. But this has been going on for quite some time. And a lot of the damage has been done. A lot of people will never believe that this was a fair election because of the words Trump has said. And imagine the effect that is going to have on all of us moving forward.
Yeah, people are going to have to navigate this sect of our society. Every single part of this country has people that voted for him and that may have been manipulated by the kind of messaging they're being told right now. And so you'll have to navigate a world where these people do not exist. They do not accept the result and will have whatever crazy mania to justify it in the face of reality, which is people trying to just move on and get something done instead of this dysfunctional government that is really not serving average people. And they've all the evidence, all this made up evidence to convince themselves to work against their own interests instead of bolstering a party and working on, you know, debating the issues and having politics as it should be instead of the like blood sport it's turned into. They've made a really, really consequential gamble on this strategy, and it's not conducive to a lot of cooperation going forward. It's really hard. Why would the Democrats want to extend an ability to work with the others? Why even offer that if they could get past all the mania, mm-hmm. just to communicate or like find some base issue that isn't controversial on whether it's an issue or not. Like that kind of craziness.
You can't work with people like that.
It's everyday life. We're going to have to be dealing with this. Like, you know, should we clean up an oil spill, or, you know, is oil bad for the natural environment? All mm-hmm. of these things are pretty evident. They've been determined to be something we have to care about. And, having asinine arguments over things that, like, should you accept laws passed by a new president? Right. Like, should you have to obey them, or do norms that were established in the Trump administration?
But Kyle, it's more than an argument. It's an attempted coup. It is an attempt to steal the election and put somebody in power that did not win.
Right, but
not only the popular vote, but the electoral vote as well. That no longer matters to them. So I'm not just going to accept that. Oh, we're going to agree to disagree or anything like that. No, this. It should be a crime what they are doing.
I know, but even if you work with them and could, why would you want to? And mm-hmm. then to the...
He should not work with it. Biden exactly. should not work with these people.
But further than that, how do you hold them accountable? How do you charge crimes? That is just going to... It fits a narrative of the psychosis the supporters of Trump are in.
Okay, you know how we do it?
We're going after them, which they should.
The people do it. Okay, like in Paris, when they try and push through some crazy law that makes it illegal to take pictures of the cops, which I think even the most pro-cop people here would have a problem with, actually making it illegal to take pictures of police. People swarmed in the streets. There were all kinds of demonstrations, and guess what? The law is being changed now. That is what politicians listen to, is people in the streets.
And people don't have a lot to do right now.
That's true.
And they're not passing any kind of stimulus so that people can afford, like, you know, game systems or whatever kind of frivolous things. So people are kind of hungry to get some action and mm-hmm. get the attention of politicians. And a lot of that delayed action from the last, I would say, 4 years, if you want to be bipartisan, say 8, I don't know, whatever. You think, you know, everything's been so flawed. Well, when will we turn this thing around and actually eliminate the deficit, work on capital improvements and infrastructure?
Do you realize,
when will we get to a point where this works?
Do you realize, Kyle, that every time there has been a Democrat put in power, the beginning of that Democrat's term has been cleaning up the mess that was left behind by the previous Republican. Let me give you some examples. In 1992, Clinton was elected, he took office in 93. He had to clean up the first Gulf War that George Bush Sr.
Desert Storm.
Yeah, the first one. In 2008... I think you might recall Barack Obama had to clean up the second massive Gulf War atrocity that George W. Bush started, and the plummeting economy that he had to rescue.
Operation Enduring Freedom.
And now Biden is going to have to clean up this whole pandemic mess that Trump is responsible for not dealing with in a serious manner. So it seems every time a Democrat is put in office, the first portion of their term is hell because of all the mess they have to clean up. And Republicans will blame them for the hell. That's the ultimate irony, is that they will be seen as somehow the one that was in power when we were in the middle of a horrible war, or when the economy was falling apart, or when people were dying left and right. But in actuality, it just seems like every single time the Republicans just run roughshod and screw everything up, and the Democrats have to come in and fix it, and then get voted out of office again because they don't stand up strongly enough to these people. That's the problem. They really need to take a strong position. I don't think it's wrong to be progressive. I think progressives are doing well, and they should be listened to. I hope Biden doesn't make those same mistakes that have been made time and time again. Hey, today Attorney General William Barr actually said that the Justice Department has not uncovered evidence of widespread voter fraud that would change the outcome of the 2020 presidential election. Shortly afterwards, he was called to the White House, and he is now being attacked left and right by the ultra-right wing for daring to say that. Now, I have no love lost for this guy. I don't care what happens to him. It's like choosing sides between Hitler and Stalin. But imagine that. He had the audacity to actually say that there's no evidence, just like everybody else, and he's being called on the carpet for that. So that's the reality that we're facing. Now, the other important thing to let everybody in the world know about, especially those people living in Georgia, is that there is a super important runoff election for both Senate seats taking place on January 5th. Now, there's a deadline for voter registration. That deadline is next Monday. So next week when we're doing our show, that deadline will have passed. So if you are in Georgia and have not registered to vote, or if you know somebody in Georgia who has not registered to vote, perhaps somebody who turned 18 since the election and is now eligible to vote, contact them. Get them to register. Register yourself if you are a resident. All the information is at georgia.gov. And early voting, where you can vote from your home by mail, or by showing up, that begins on December 14th. Again, all the details at georgia.gov and how to register, how to do early voting. And again, the date for the very special election, January 5th for both Senate seats. Now, if both those Senate seats go to the Democrats, and there's a good chance that could happen. If that does happen, Mitch McConnell does not run the Senate anymore. It's incredible. I couldn't have written a better script, but that is what will happen. If both those seats go to Democrats, Mitch McConnell will not be running the Senate. That's all we need to remember, is that that's what this fight is about. And then things can actually happen. Things can get done. I was watching Joe Biden earlier. Isn't it great Joe Biden got injured playing with his dog? I love that.
Yes.
Just thinking of him playing with his dog. I mean, Trump doesn't have a dog. Trump doesn't even like dogs. Dogs don't like Trump.
He has lap dogs.
He sure does. But right away, this guy, the 78-year-old, is injured doing something physical. I don't know. It probably hurts, but it somehow bodes well. Where was I going with that? It just felt like watching him earlier on TV, he just seemed like an adult, somebody who knew what they were doing. He was introducing potential members of the cabinet and talking about the plan to get the economy back to battle COVID, taking it seriously. We haven't had that in such a long time.
Yeah, I only caught a clip of that introduction and ceremony. I guess you'd call it sort of a announcement ceremony.
Yeah, press conference announcement.
It's not a ceremony. I think that's the last administration. They had a lot of ceremonies.
And speaking of ceremonies, what do you think is going to happen on Inauguration Day? Is Trump going to show? Should Trump be allowed to even show up? I guess he's president, so he can't stop.
Well,
him
I think they're going to have to dart him like a wild animal or something. So He'll probably be like in a sort of a sleep state while they're putting the straitjacket on him.
Somebody might have done that already, because that would explain a lot.
Oh yeah. Well, anyway. So and then of course that much weight, you're probably going to need at least like six, maybe eight guys to drag him. Without knocking over furniture.
I know we're all enjoying picturing that, but I'm asking seriously, should he be in attendance? He's not going to concede. So why would he even be there? You know, and what would he do to mess that up and just cast a pall on the entire day? I don't know. My prediction was that he's going to go to Mar-a-Lago and stay there. I'm happy with that. Put up a big fence around it.
Yeah, I was imagining like the Trump helicopter showing up, you know, illegally, like just landing like haphazardly on the lawn and then like rescuing him and flying him off.
Well, that's what's supposed to happen on Inauguration Day, just not there.
Yeah, but he's not supposed to use his own stuff. We can only speculate, mm-hmm. and I feel like that's sort of dangerous. I feel like he'll have to be kind of, he'll be morose and subdued and maybe go through the motions if he shows up at all.
Yeah, but think of all his supporters and those people that will inflict all kinds of chaos on the event.
It's
really hard. On the supporters, on the new administration.
Well, because the stock and trade of his brand is the other side is the enemy. So there's no, like, there's no room really to be gracious in defeat. He's not carved that out. And so to see, to even imagine what that looks like, I feel like he'll just skip it. He's late to everything. Mm-hmm. Everything, he's late. Press conference. He's like, it's his time. It's all about him. He'll dominate it by being late if he does show up. And will be a total, like, morose, as I said, just a drag on whatever ceremony.
He's already a drag on it.
Yeah.
Just a drag on all of this.
I mean, just thinking about it, I'm getting upset about, you know, kind of like disinterested.
But after that, oh, and by the way, a lot of people have been writing in asking, where's the new theme? This is how it works, folks. This is always how it's worked. The new theme starts when we have a new president or when the existing president starts a second term. So it won't be until after January 20th. And we are still working on possibilities for the theme. The opening theme of the show always changes every 4 years. That's I'm going to miss the one that we have now, but it's time now for another theme. How I did that. That was slick there. It's time now for Films of the Year That Was, which is our sustaining feature that puts Kyle and I on a voyage to see all the films that have been graced with an Academy Award for Best Film since the Academy Awards began, both foreign and domestic. And we are up to 1984.
Yes, I affectionately refer to it as a cinematic expedition.
Yes, as we trudge through the tundra of film. And this week we saw a couple of interesting films. Amadeus was the domestic winner of the Academy Award in 1984. What do you think?
Well, I saw a lot more in it than I'd seen previously, because this film I actually saw in a classroom setting. I had a brilliant music course, I guess, as a youngster, and a little past elementary school, and this film was something that we watched, and I can't remember what the lesson exactly was.
The lesson was a teacher what didn't want to teach that day.
I'm pretty sure that's the wonderful part of this teacher. And yeah, so the that week, I guess, was well carved into the lesson plan, and we got something from it. Other than that, I think officially, and it was of course seen on a square television, and I can't help but bring that kind of technical stuff to our discussions here. But we were able to watch a copy of it that was a little bit better. Not a whole lot better, but it's presented in a wider format because we have modern TVs. And
I got,
of course,
a weird-ass DVD, though. You had to flip it in the middle.
Yeah,
it's a
yeah.
Two-sided DVD. I think it came from the 1990s or something.
Well, also, I think that's the quality versus the length of it. They wanted to do a very long film, but to fit it on one side, it would have been a dual-layer disc, but I don't think they had those for wide DVD distribution, so they used these flippable or two-sided discs for longer format, but in a way that you wanted to contain the quality, because the longer DVD goes, the more compression you throw at it. Anyway, technical stuff aside, so we were able to really view it, and of course I'd seen it, so it was a latent memory, but I hadn't seen or hadn't remembered the entirety of the story. I knew that the protagonist was a competitor. But, of course, seeing him in a role where he had the ear of royalty and sort of the stealing or the borrowing of Mozart's brilliance, and, of course, that is the namesake of the film, Amadeus, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart.
And the guy, the competitor, the jealous guy, was Salieri.
Salieri, the yeah. Italian. And, of course, the nationalities are really important, too. And I don't think that, as a student, that sinks in. as much in the history and so on.
And also they all have American accents. So the way I read it as being described was if they're speaking German, then they have American accents. And the reason they did that was because they wanted to focus on the role more than getting the accent right. So it's kind of weird. You hear people from foreign countries. I think Salieri had a British accent, even though he was Italian. They had rules. They had rules on how to portray this, and it didn't bother me at all. What is of note, though, is the fact that this whole rivalry, there was some kind of a rivalry, but Salieri didn't kill Amadeus. I mean, that's fiction.
That's
a lot of this is just a lie, but it's what you do when you embellish on the truth a little bit.
Highly dramatized, and the staging, the setting of it was really, really brilliantly done. The costuming, the sets, and inside some of the theaters, it was just astounding what they were able to do in a period piece.
Interesting fact about that. While it was supposed to take place in Vienna, in Austria, it was actually filmed in Czechoslovakia, which was a country that still existed in 1984, a communist country, who gave full access to all of the ancient buildings, including the opera house where Mozart premiered his opera.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and
okay.
That was one of the most amazing things there.
But
it wasn't said to be in that country. It was supposed to be in Vienna, but they used the same one. So that was pretty emotional for the people involved in the production.
I can't say enough about the authenticity that comes through when you do good location shoots. We saw the same thing recently with the Chernobyl special on HBO. They found a reactor that was similar. I mean, you got to do that kind of research, and it builds that story and gives it so many like burnished detail that mm-hmm. you can't really recreate without making some cumbersome mistake or some trade-off where you just can't quite get every bit of it, you know?
They said they were able to turn the camera on a street and not have to correct anything. Imagine that, going back to the 1700s, and the buildings pretty much look the same. That is incredible to be able to do that. No TV aerials or a modern day things that would show up in the shot. So having that ability is what you need to make a film like this.
Of course, yeah. And a lot of horses and carriages and
music. Oh my God, the music!
Amazing music. And the music, when they're working on it together, is I think really key, because you're hearing the piece be built, but you hear it in sections. I know there's been a couple. Yeah. There's a couple songs out there that are famous for this, and then riffs on that have been done with dance music. But breaking the compositions down into their elemental pieces, they do this in part of the storytelling when they're working feverishly and Amadeus is on his deathbed. Those pieces like that really make the music, the sound, that much more vivid. And they did do a lot of really brilliant stuff with natural sounds and just creating this world and sense of depth in the dialogue, or complementing the dialogue, and so on and so forth.
There's so many little bits. It's definitely a film worth watching. One of my favorite scenes, which I don't think anybody else really likes that much, is it's just kind of this funny aside where Mozart's father is visiting, and he doesn't approve of the woman that Mozart is marrying. They go out for some kind of merriment, and it involves Mozart's father wearing a costume. Now, this costume is interesting because the front, you can't really tell what the front or the back is. There's two faces. There's a smiling face and a frowning face. So Mozart is very aware that his father might be uncomfortable, and he catches his father, and the frowning face is facing him. And so he feels bad. His father is frowning. Then the person turns around, and all of a sudden the face is smiling because that side is now facing him, and Mozart is happy. His father is happy. And then his father takes off the mask, and he's frowning in real life. So that to me was just a very funny scene. And
yeah, the wigs and the masks too are, I think, a big part of the costuming mm-hmm. and storytelling. But those little humorous moments.
It was made accessible.
Cool.
I think, you know, the American accent, and using the guy, you know, Tom Hulce, the lead, from Animal House. I thought that was a good move. That was a good move. That's what acting is. So
fitting.
Now let's go to our international film.
Yeah, the international one from 1984 is called Dangerous Moves, or La Diagonale de Fou.
Dangerous Moves. Yeah, what a weird film this was. It's a Swiss film. And it's about chess. And apparently there's a TV series now all about chess. Everyone's talking about chess.
Apparently, so. Yeah. The Queen something on the...
Queen's Gambit.
On the net stream, whatever it's called. Yeah.
But this, 1984, was about two players, both from the Soviet Union. One who escaped years earlier. Another one who's coming from the Soviet Union to Switzerland to have some kind of world championship match. And... what do you think?
Well, it was okay. I wasn't really taken with it.
You're being generous, I think.
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, it's I like chess. I haven't ever really committed to knowing the rules. Not that, I mean, that's, has anything to do
important.
With the film.
Yeah.
No.
What's important is, do you have a work that you can get drawn? I mean, I don't play classical music, but yet I was drawn into Amadeus.
Right, right.
So this should draw you in equally. It doesn't. It just doesn't. It's all about just these two guys, both of them unlikable characters, playing chess over and over and over again, because there's a whole bunch. It's never clear how many games they have to play, but they just keep playing. And, you know, there's some drama. The young guy, his wife is in a mental institution, and somehow she's going to be used to get him to break, and the other guy's got a heart condition. I don't know. It just never really captivated me. And,
unsympathetic characters. I think you hit it right there, too.
Yeah.
Just not lending themselves to really, you know, why should you invest in them? In the story
they just
telling.
Took themselves too seriously, and yeah, this film I don't think aged well, and it's almost impossible to get. We had to go to the pirates to get it because you couldn't find any legitimate channels.
Oh, how are they?
Oh, yeah, they're rough, you know, rough around the edges as always. But this is part of the job. We have to see films sometimes that don't land, and this one just didn't do it for me.
No.
Dangerous Moves.
Yeah. Precursor to Dangerous Minds, I think.
I guess so. Yeah. All right, well, that's going to do it.
Let's get out of here. Yeah, let's just wrap that thing up.
Turn it off. Well, we have 3 minutes left. So anything else happening this week that you want to... We weren't supposed to do a show today. We had plans. We were going to do something else. But those plans were canceled when the show was uncanceled.
Can't think of anything.
All right.
I'm not really that informed. I don't know. I feel like I should be finding out from the show. Please write us, otw@2600.com.
Yes, do that.
We love to find out what we you think we should cover, or what you think, or just something that is worth covering.
Staying on the subject of film for a moment, we saw the end of Fargo on Sunday. If you want evidence of the blatant racism that exists in this country, go to IMDb and look at the comments for maybe the first episode at least. And you'll see everybody is so upset, and the vast majority of people are livid with rage that they chose to follow black people this season. As if there weren't black people in the Midwest, in Fargo, or Kansas City, as this particular season turned out to be mostly about, and calling things political when it deals with racism. Yeah. So, you know, if you're in Minnesota or North Dakota or Kansas or Missouri or any of those states in the Midwest, and you talk about or portray how a farmer has a hard life, is that political? When you talk about how cold it gets in the wintertime, is that bringing politics into it? Well, how come when you're focusing on a black family and you're accurately portraying the racism they have to deal with on a daily basis, all of a sudden that's out of bounds, that's political, you can't do that, that's ruining the whole show? All these people who say we're Fargo fans, we're aficionados of Fargo, I cannot believe how racist they are in believing that it's somehow destroying the show to have people who aren't Lily White being portrayed. They were every bit as much of the culture as anyone else. And yeah, it's not the same. But you had a damn UFO in the show, and nobody complained about that. and here you have some black people, and all of a sudden, you've ruined Fargo. So I didn't think this season was the best season, but it certainly was Fargo. There's no question about that. So that's what happens. That's what happens when you try to be creative and do something different. You have all these wannabe directors on IMDb, like basically telling you what you did wrong.
I think it'll work, though, for the ages, right? I mean, those comments and attitudes are fleeting. When we look back, will this,
yes,
as
it
you
works.
Said, will it be Fargo? Will the essence?
It is Fargo because it basically describes things that happened in the history that was already alluded to. You see characters and you realize, oh, that's that character. He's going to appear in a different season.
You'll probably even not think it's a, you know, you'll be less critical of the season, probably, looking
absolutely.
Back. You'll remember the parts about it that
open
were
your mind
prescient.
And please, please be open to different things and different perspectives because they're all over the place. We're out of time. OTW at 2600.com. Stay safe. Stay healthy. We'll see you next week.
Good night, everyone.
I say. And trying for a coup. I think we should be free to do what we want to. You may well roll over, but don't expect me to go along. Hold it, wait a minute. I ain't done nothing wrong. Where will they welcome us if open arms and we are on the run? To some remote island where we can have some fun. What they're trying to sell us is really just a con. Hasn't anybody noticed what's been going on? They shouldn't get away with it, and somebody should say, I shouldn't have to pack up all my bags and move away. The global war on culture started with a song. Hold it, wait a minute. I ain't done nothing wrong. Drew a line into the sand that you can't decide upon. When you wake up in the morning, what side are you on? With some surprise and deep regret, I have to say so long. Nothing wrong. Where will they work? Texas conquest in a cultural civil war. At least I know what I'm fighting for, what I'm fighting for. As hypocrites and liars adopt a moral tongue, he who is without sin may as well. Christ, I reserve.